Chapter 38. My orders were to fly straight back to Earth from the Beta site. By taking a detour to Zone 2, I had already exceeded my orders. I say exceeded instead of violated, because taking initiative sounds better than gross insubordination. Speaking of taking initiative, I immediately ordered the ship to the Vreen star system that had been attacked. We would not be conducting a search and rescue operation, or any kind of search for survivors. Our search would be limited to getting data about the Sentinel involved. Specifically, I needed to know whether the Zone 1 Sentinel had gotten ambitious about his job and gone rogue to attack the Vreen for some unknown reason. That would be a major problem. We could no longer count on the damned thing staying within Zone 1, so the idea of quarantine would be thrown out the window. Actually, that Sentinel ranging far from the area of its original attacks was a best-case scenario. My fear was that, like Skippy suggested, more than one of the awful things was active. He confirmed to me that he could tell the difference between Sentinels. They didn't have names, but each one left a unique imprint on local space-time. Shit. You are absolutely certain? I asked, my hands in my lap and my fingers crossed for good luck. Yes, this attack was less than 6 days ago, he replied. The signature is recent enough to be very distinctive. Right, but I was seriously grasping at straws, hoping he was wrong. This is a different area of the galaxy, and the... Joe, he said quietly. I am sorry. No, it is not possible that I am wrong about this. The Sentinel that was here is not the same one as in Zone 1. A tiger can't change its stripes, and trust me, a Sentinel can't alter its signature. There are at least two Sentinels active now. I'm sorry.
Why did you say, at least? I asked warily, my fingers still crossed, though that gesture did not seem to be working.
It's a big galaxy, right? If we know two of them are awake in this quadrant, what are the odds they are the only ones?
What now, sir? Sims prompted me after I sat there frozen for a moment.
Earth. We go to Earth, link up with the transports, bring them to Avalon. Lowering her voice, she leaned closer and whispered,
After that?
All I could do was shake my head. The transport ships would most likely be making a one-way trip. Avalon wasn't ready to support that many humans, so most of the passengers would remain in orbit, possibly for more than a year. By the time those ships were empty and available, I doubted we would be able to park them in Earth orbit to peacefully reload with new colonists. Sims had asked a good question, a very good question. When faced with only awful choices, you take the one that is least bad. Save as many people as we could. Take them beyond the galaxy, and like Skippy suggested, lock the door behind us. And hope there were no sentinels in the Sculptor Dwarf galaxy. Before going through the closest wormhole to Earth, we went to a location 6.3 light-years from our home star in the exact middle of nowhere. If it means anything to you, the site was roughly in the direction of Lalande 21185. That is, of course, the brightest red dwarf star visible from the northern hemisphere of Earth, or it is according to Wikipedia. I don't know anything else about it. Absolutely nothing was within a quarter light-year of our position, except for tiny particles of dust, hydrogen atoms, and a probe the size of a raisin. Or at least we hoped the probe was there. It was supposed to be in that spot within half a kilometer. We couldn't actually detect the thing with passive sensors. It was encased in stealth foam, and the ambient starlight was pretty dim, like pitch black. And I'm not talking about an old Vin Diesel movie. If I was outside in a spacesuit, I wouldn't be able to see my hand in front of my face other than when my hand passed in front of a star. Anyway, we stopped there to comply with the protocol established by UNEF Command before we left. The procedure was we go to one of several dozen locations within a bubble of roughly half a light year, and Skippy pings the probe with one of his fancy codes, or something like that. Identifies himself in a way no one else could. The probe then responds with the location of that day's designated picket ship, a UN Navy destroyer. Which the probe did. So we jumped a third of a light year and sent out another ping with Valkyrie's ID code. 20 seconds later, the destroyer UNS Cordoba responded. The next step in the process should have been for the picket ship to give us an update and transmit any orders from command. Instead, that ship requested me to stand by for a dropship to come aboard.
Well, that was unusual. And when I requested an explanation, Cordoba's commander actually sent a terse order for communication silence. I got up and stood behind Reed's pilot couch. Fireball standby. Skippy, do you see? Got it, Joe. Scarab-class dropship in stealth, 600 kilometers away, now moving toward us. You want me to scan it? It's within range of your presence. You can inspect it without using the ship's active sensors. The order for communication silence also prevented us from sending out sensor pings. Yes, scanning now. It's harmless, Joe. 6 people aboard the Scarab, all humans and all pilots. They have been there for 8 days. Ooh, that can't be fun. I've been there. I can confirm it is not fun. The Scarab is a lot bigger inside than some tin cans I've been stuck in with you, sir, Reed grimaced. Not that the experience wasn't totally delightful. You are a lion sack of shit, Reed. I grinned despite the tense situation. Nothing dangerous over there, Skippy? The dropship is not armed. The only hazard is that some idiot cooked a smelly fish for dinner last night, and the other 5 are considering whether to toss the garbage and the offender out an airlock. Whew! I knew what the cabin of a dropship smelled like after a couple days, even without strong-smelling food. In crowded quarters, the only fish allowed should be goldfish crackers. I'd vote yes on that one. XO, have a can of air freshener brought to the docking bay? The Scarab flew into one of our docking bays, and Skippy confirmed there weren't any weapons aboard. When the crew walked down the ramp, I was there to greet the guy walking down the back ramp, returning his salute. Major Valenzuela. I got that info from the insignia and name tag on his flight suit. Welcome aboard. We have hot chow and showers for your people. General Bishop. He had that star-struck look that I found annoying. That is one of many downsides to being famous. People don't act like I'm a real person. Thank you, sir, but all I'm supposed to do now is shake your hand. My hand stayed firmly at my side for a long moment, until I realized the guy was only trying to confirm I wasn't a hologram. It's the real me. I held out a hand and he grasped for a shake, just long enough to not be awkward. Sorry, sir. Hell, you're that worried about a deception op? What's going on? He made a gesture toward the cockpit window and the woman there gave a thumbs up. Valenzuela turned back to me. Just transmitted a data package and orders to you. Do you want the short version? Hell yes. Earth is under a blockade by both senior species. They are blaming us, he said, while he looked me straight in the eye, for waking up a sentinel. The Maxols claim we are responsible, that crashing wormhole networks must have caused a sentinel to respond. The good news is they haven't shot at us, at least, not as of our last update 2 days ago. They found out rats are leaving the sinking ship, he said with a sour expression. The colonists going out to Avalon were not popular with Navy personnel who had to protect them, but would likely not have the privilege of a secure refuge for themselves and their families. The Navy people did their job anyway because that's what they do. 3 days after the transports jumped away, 2 groups of ships arrived, 1 from each of the seniors. They announced that no one else would be leaving Earth unless we got the Sentinel put back in its box. They also demanded we recall the transports or provide their location. One side of his mouth turned upward in a wry smile. Good thing Command made sure even they didn't know where the transports are. You do, though? Cordoba's AI knows, he replied, and the smile wiped off his face. Sir, you can put that Sentinel back in a box? I'm not going to lie to you, so no. Good news is, it looks like crashing wormhole networks is not what woke the damn things up. Bad news is, there's at least 2 of the damn things active now. Merda. He didn't bother to speak English for me. Yeah. General, he glanced back to his ship, his people. We have to go. Major, I am countermanding your orders. Lowering my voice, I added, I know what it's like being stuck in a sardine can like that. I used the word sardine deliberately. Take 30 minutes to shower and change into fresh uniforms. Showers are right outside the docking bay. We'll have hot food waiting to take with you. That's in order, sir? Damn straight it is. 32 minutes later, with the crew freshly showered and in clean flight suits, the Scarab flew out of our docking bay. 7 minutes after that, once the Scarab reached a safe distance, we jumped away toward the waiting transports using the coordinates provided by the Cordoba. Not toward the transports exactly. We actually made our first jump in the opposite direction. 2 jumps later, to make sure no one was following us, we arrived at the transports. They were all in stealth and a loose formation about 2 light seconds away. One of the ships responded to our pings, which is excellent OPSEC, but annoying. Finally, Admiral Martinez contacted me directly. Anticipating a difficult conversation, I took the call in my office with the door closed. The only times I had met Admiral Martinez was in Zhao's staff meetings, and I didn't know the guy at all. Fortunately, he didn't waste time with chit-chat.
General Bishop, I hope you have good news for us.
I didn't, and I told him that. He took 10 minutes to consider, then called me back.
Bishop, we need an escort out to Point Bravo.
He named the coordinates where some ships would go on to Avalon, and others would wait for us to come back to escort them to Jaguar.
No, sir, we don't have time for that, and going to Jaguar is a waste of time and resources. All these people need to go to the Beta site right now. That includes your ships too, sir.
I meant his own escort force of former Jarapha cruisers and destroyers.
Bishop, I have my orders, and you have yours.
The Special Mission Group is not a taxi service, sir. I touched the General Star on my uniform as I said that to remind me that, damn it, UNEF had given me authority. As a 2-star, Admiral Martinez outranked me, but SMG reported directly to UNEF Command, not to UN Navy Brass. The orders I received stated I was to assist the regular Navy subject to circumstances, about which I was to use my best judgment. That's what happens when a commander is out of communications range from Earth. If you want an escort to Avalon, we'll guide you and open the door. But if we're going to stop these Sentinels from trampling the entire galaxy, we can't waste time flying back and forth across the galaxy.
Sir, I softened my tone. I know it sucks to make a one-way trip out there. You feel like you're running away, that the fight is here.
It is, he insisted. Admiral, I'm going to be blunt. Your ships wouldn't even be a speed bump to a Sentinel. The only useful thing you can do with the resources assigned to you is make sure the civilians on those transports get to Avalon safely and don't do something stupid to get killed once they go dirtside. As a job, it sucks. But it's your responsibility, sir, not mine. With all due respect, sir, you can stay here or follow us. But the only place we're going is Avalon. That was a fun conversation. In the end, Martinez agreed to an escort out to the Beta site. Not because he conceded a lack of authority over me, but because he understood that the sooner we were done escorting his transports, the sooner the merry band of pirates could deal with the Sentinel threat.
Is there anything you need from me?
We would appreciate fresh food if you have any to spare, I said. While we didn't have a plan to stop Sentinels from rampaging across the galaxy, I figured it would take longer than expected. Because everything always did.
Well, that was rude, Skippy announced as he appeared on my office desk when he had finished tucking the Super Duty wormhole to bed for a nice long nap behind us.
We had just returned to the Milky Way after dropping off the transport ships at Avalon. Our stay there was less than a day, just long enough for the transports to detach from their star carriers, then for those carriers to shuffle Admiral Martinez's escort warships around on the hardpoints for proper balance. When we came back through the Super Duty wormhole, Martinez had his ship immediately jump away for the journey to Earth. By taking advantage of the shortcuts Skippy had created by moving wormholes, the trip was long in distance, but relatively short in time.
They didn't even say goodbye.
I hate long goodbyes, Skippy, I replied, thinking about Sims. Making the brief stopover at Avalon had been especially tough on her, with not enough time to fly down to see her husband. They had to talk by video, and even then there wasn't time for a long conversation. She had to arrange for cross-decking of supplies for Martinez's ships, and we sent over to the transports stuff we didn't need, like toys and games from back when Valkyrie hosted the children we rescued from captivity on Rikers. Her eyes were red when she was loading the toys aboard a dropship, and I admit I shed a few tears while helping her.
It was still rude, Skippy complained, breaking my train of thought.
They are busy. I was annoyed by his petty annoyance.
"Hm,"
he sniffed. "I don't know what good they think they can do at Earth. Those ships will be bugs on a windshield if the seniors decide to attack."
"You fight with the force you have, not with the force you wish you had."
As I said that, I heard the voice of Sergeant Greg Koch in my head, explaining why the Army had issued desert boots to us in the Nigerian jungle. Damn, that was a blast from the past. "It won't be a fight, Joe. Speaking of which, what are we doing next? You should have taken my advice and stayed at Avalon."
"We're going to stuff those sentinels back in the boxes they came from."
O-M-G, dude. "What? I know they didn't actually come from a box. Don't bother." He just stared at me, blinking slowly.
"Have you completely lost your mind?"
"No. Skippy, we have a job to do. You have a job. I'm going to find someplace safe, like the core of a neutron star."
It's not even a job, it's insanity. What is wrong with you?"
"The merry band of pirates have to fix this problem."
"Why?"
"It now looks like we are not primarily responsible for this latest mess."
"Do you really believe that?"
"Ugh."
"No, but I was hoping you would," he muttered.
"What?"
"Nothing. Hey, did you watch that Bears game?"
"Don't change the subject, beer can.
Whether we caused the problem or not, the entire galaxy expects us to fix it."
"This is so unfair. All my previous awesomeness is catching up to me. I have set an impossible standard. Oh, why did I have to be so magnificent?"
"My heart bleeds for you.
Is anything else in the galaxy capable of taking on a sentinel?"
"No."
"Then that includes us, dum-dum. Joe, I hate to remind you of the obvious, but nothing can kill a sentinel."
"That is," I said very slowly, "not exactly true."
His avatar froze for a second. He must have been thinking about what I said.
"I am probably going to regret asking this, but..."
"What?"
"We already know of a dead sentinel."
"We do?"
"I don't..."
"Oh, no. No, 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 no. Nuh-uh."
"Yes."
"Nuh-uh. Yes."
"Okay, technically, yes, we did encounter a dead sentinel, but that was in the Roach Motel. It might as well be on the far side of the universe for all the good that does us."
"You don't know what killed it?"
"Gosh, let me think. The chalk outline of the body at the crime scene wasn't any help, but..."
"No, dum-dum! I wasn't able to ask what killed it since it was, you know, dead."
"I know that, you ass. You weren't able to, like, search its archives, scan it to determine what type of weapons were used against it, something like that?"
"Nope. Sorry. When we were close to the damned thing, I wasn't exactly at my full awesomeness. After that, Count Chocula banned us from getting near the thing."
"Right. Did the Guardians give you a hint about what happened?"
No. They were not real friendly, remember?"
"Yeah."
"Did they kill the Sentinel?"
"No, they..."
"Could they? Jeez, I don't know. Let me think about it a minute, will ya?"
Skippy had explained that Guardians were small machines designed to protect fixed assets like a star system, while Sentinels relied on sheer size and power to accomplish their assigned missions. Guardians had to swarm to utilize their full capabilities. By small, I mean a typical Guardian was the size of a dropship, although they could be as small as a toaster or larger than a ship, depending on their role. Also, unlike a Sentinel, Guardians could make decisions on their own without direction from a master AI like Skippy. In fact, he had barely been able to get the stupid things to stand down from killing us while we were trapped in the Roach Motel. Their acknowledgement of his authority was tenuous at best, and the rigid thinking machines had made it clear we were not welcome to come back, that they weren't rolling out the welcome mat for him. They hadn't even validated our parking ticket before we left, so I was extra disappointed in their behavior.
"And?" I prompted him.
"And I said I'm thinking about it.
Think faster."
Okay, I suppose it is possible that Guardians could have been involved in the demise of that sentinel. I mean, it died in the Roach Motel, so logically, how do you know that?"
"It's dead," he said slowly in his "I am explaining hyperspatial physics to a toddler" tone that I hated.
"And being dead, it can't move. So could someone have moved the body?"
"Like how?"
He rolled his eyes at me. in the trunk of their car? So the answer is no. Let me ask you this. What could have killed a sentinel? Do you want a theoretical or a practical answer?
Practical first.
Well, another sentinel could have done it, I suppose.
Shit, that's no good.
That is the most likely scenario.
How about you tell me a way we could kill a sentinel without us needing to control a sentinel?
How about I promise you a flying pony for your birthday?
That would be more likely to happen, he muttered under his breath.
I told you, dum-dum, sentinels were designed to be the ultimate weapon. Also, now that I'm reviewing the data, the sentinel in the Roach Motel was not killed by another of its kind. The resulting damage would be distinctive. I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry, that's good news.
It is?
Yes.
It means something other than a sentinel is capable of killing a sentinel, right?
Wow. You really are desperate if you think that is good news.
May I point out that all this talk is useless since we have no way of knowing what killed the thing?
You may not point that out because you are wrong. We do have a way to find out what killed it.
Really? How?
Well,
shit.
You are not gonna like this. I used his own line on him.
I'm not gonna do it either.
I haven't told you my idea yet.
Joe, he folded arms across his chest and glared at me. I am not going back to the Roach Motel. No fucking way.